Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All good? All we need is Andy. Where's he gone? Heavy coat, about 63 degrees out there.
No, I'm not ready to divest myself of this coat yet.
Okay. Right, we're ready?
Strange way, what's happened to this microphone?
It's working, I take it. Here we go. This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Matthew Syed came in, journalist and author. He's got a new book out. He talked about that, aimed at kids.
Yeah, and then we had a general chat about sport.
We did.
That, yeah.
Talked a bit of pep and more.
Yeah, football.
We chatted to David Allen, who's a boxer. He's just been sparring with Tyson Fury and has left his mark on him, as you'll hear. He's also sparred in the past with Anthony Joshua, so he gave us a real insight into the two men.
Good talker too, yeah.
Yeah, he was very good. Yeah,
we had a chat.
Of course we did, yeah.
We talked a bit about last night, we talked a bit about general stuff.
And we had a few puns.
Oh yeah, that new book. We've got a listener sent us a book from about 1934 and a very good letter that he wrote with it, a 5-page handwritten letter. Most appreciated.
See, kids, remember them? Anyway, you'll hear a bit of that as well. So not the whole 5 pages. But anyway, here it all is. Anyway, 5 minutes past one. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Ed.
Good afternoon, Paul, and good afternoon, everybody. And what a fine game that was last
Well,
night.
Second half was quite exciting.
Oh, quite exciting.
Because
yeah.
of the Stoke jeopardy.
The Stoke jeopardy, yeah. But
made it interesting.
I just had this feeling that it would have been so great last night if Michael Oliver had sent off both Joe Hart and Jack Butland.
Really?
Just for fun.
Well, he had a big call, didn't he? The last moment, it was never a pen, but the last moments of the game, there was a call to be made on whether there was a push in the back. And virtually the last kick. But, you know, he wasn't going to go for that one again, was he?
No, I don't think he was really.
But it was never a pen, anyway. The one that was, I mean, the most pathetic dive of the night went down, not for the first time, to old Chicharito. I mean, I don't know why he does it. He's not even any good at it. Do you see that? There was that one moment where he kind of deliberately thought, oh, the defender's coming here. I'll get my back into him and then throw myself deliberately to the ground. Should have been booked for that, shouldn't he?
I think he should, really.
Yeah, definitely. Terrible.
But there was one bit of play in the first half that really did sum up the whole thing. Mark Noble miscontrolled the ball and kicked it out. And the Stoke right-back, Moritz Bauer, was so keen to get it, he just fell over.
Yeah.
Did you see that? It was incredible.
Desperate times,
marvellous,
wasn't
it?
But really? It was exciting. The closing stages, I thought, were pretty exciting, simply because there was so much riding on it for Stoke. They got their noses in front and couldn't hang on. Very good goal by Carroll. Took his chance well.
Oh, yeah. Frustrating because he's got so much going for him.
He has,
except the fact that he hardly plays. But other than that, he's really got everything you'd want. You know,
The Moose took Karen Brady to task last night on Twitter. And if you saw that, she had a new show on TV.
Oh, yeah,
TV.
I want to talk about the new show, actually.
Yeah, and she had a new show on TV and she tweeted at about 7:30. Don't forget my new show's on tonight half an hour. And Moose said, hang on, shouldn't you be advising people to watch West Ham rather than your new show?
Her new show, actually, it's called Give It a Year. It's part of a new series of programmes, including Give It 5 Minutes. That's Alan Brazil's morning visits to the toilet.
Oh, dear, what a thought.
And Give It 6 Months, a programme about the marriages of Katie Price.
Oh, Andy. That's a bit of satire. Thank you very much
Thank
for
you.
That. Yeah. Give it a year for what? Give it a year before the fans start rebelling about moving to the new stadium.
Yeah, we'll
What's it about? It's about starting a business.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Good.
It's about what she's done in her
life. I was watching the match instead. I'm afraid of them.
I didn't see it, to be honest. I did not see it, as they say. Talking of the pricing, Katie Price, she's struggling to get London Marathon donations. As fans,
I didn't know she was doing these.
Yeah, she's doing them.
Brilliant.
Marathon.
Good luck to her. Yeah,
of course. And fans don't believe she'll finish. I think it's a bit harsh, really. The glamour model has pleaded with her social media followers to donate to the British Lung Foundation in honour of her mum, who's not well. Twitter users reckon she will not get far on the 26-mile course on Sunday. She's already spoken about her dodgy knee.
Oh, wow.
Well, I think it's a bit harsh, isn't it?
You should always walk, do what the Moose did.
Yeah,
make exactly. a nice 8-hour walk of it. You still get the money, that's the important right. thing. Good luck to our own Andy Goldstein, he's doing, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, I've done a little bit of sponsorship of Andy.
Good
so
luck,
that's
Andy,
good.
Yeah.
Sergio Aguero has ordered Manchester City to keep winning titles and dominate English football for years to come. No, he hasn't.
Okay.
I went through the quote. I won't bore you with the quotes. He never ordered.
There was no orders.
No ordering out, going on at all whatsoever, but apparently he ordered them.
There was a lot of people kind of taking the Twitter the other day and saying, they're so Vincent Kompany's house is not quite what I expected. I expected something a bit more open plan and modern. But that was his wife's nan's place, wasn't it? Apparently, that's what they used when they won the title.
Oh, yeah.
Vincent Kompany was in a very old traditional sort of nan's sitting room.
Was this in Belgium?
No, over here. I think his missus is British.
Yeah. Fine,
yeah. So, but yeah, they're all in and they're all at her place. And yeah, so it was kind of, it's like your nan's sitting room would be, really, if she's an average nan.
Yeah.
But I did like the idea that Vincent likes the nan look, and he's brought in interior designers who cost hundreds of thousands of pounds
to give him
that authentic look of your nan's living room. They're the big old sofas.
I bet somebody's
Antimacassars. What a player he was.
Tremendous.
Remember the young Finnish boy? He's not Finnish. He's only 28. Yeah. Antimacassar.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it was great. All those little ornaments, the picture of the girl crying on that. Yeah, that'd be the couple, the naked couple and the big winged. Yeah, they'd have all that up there, wouldn't they? Like your nan's sitting room. Horse brasses.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'd go for that. And Shaqiri, he's a good player, Shaqiri, isn't he? But his body language, have you ever seen a player with...
his body shapes. You want to start with his body shape.
Great,
he's like a barrel, isn't he?
He slumps, he sulks, he shouts. Honestly, it'd drive you mad, that, if you were playing with him. Yeah. I mean, he's a really good player, but... I don't know if he does that. It's just he plays for Switzerland, doesn't he? I don't know if he does that for Switzerland.
They've been incredibly unlucky, Stoke, really. I mean, I think Paul Lambert's got a point. You know, they were lucky to an extent.
You can't see a game out.
No,
it's not unlucky when you can't see the game out. You're 1-0 up with about 5 minutes to go and you can't see it out.
You know, that was a good finish. That come from nowhere, that finish, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a very good finish. But, you know, the cross, there was no pressure on the ball. The cross came in, nobody cleared it, you know. So, in the end, you can't really blame them.
They needed 3 points last night to have a fighting chance.
Oh, they did. They did. They really did. Looking at the court circular, it was fantastic yesterday because, you know, it's the Commonwealth exhibition. Not exhibition. What's the Commonwealth?
I'm not going to that. When's that on?
Commonwealth exhibition.
What are you talking about? The Commonwealth what?
Conference.
Oh, the Commonwealth Conference.
Commonwealth Leaders Conference. That's
Yeah, yeah.
So this bloke, the Deputy Lieutenant of Greater London.
This bloke?
Well, he's the Deputy Lieutenant of Greater London, Mr. Bruce Holder.
Right.
He was present at Heathrow Airport this afternoon for the arrival of the Republic of Seychelles, Excellency. And then Mr. Bruce Holder, this evening, was at...
Known as Noddy in the dressing room.
Was at Heathrow Airport to meet the Democratic Socialist Republic leader of Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And then in the morning, Mr. Bruce Holder was present at Heathrow Airport, London, this morning, too, for the arrival of the President of the Republic of Malawi. So basically, he was there the whole day.
He might as well just stayed at Heathrow Airport.
I don't know if he kept coming there and back again. A bit like a cab.
He just got him in the car.
Yeah, you get a token if you don't go far enough.
He just got him in the right cab, and he just stayed there, went back to Costa, I would imagine.
They're all here, though. Prince Henry of Wales, yesterday received the Honourable Josiah Vorek Bananarama.
But now, come on, she's not called Bananarama.
Is it? Bainimarama Rama.
You're right.
I can't read it, but it looks like Bananarama. Prime Minister of the Republic of Fiji.
Okay.
I do apologise if that's not how it's pronounced.
I do struggle with those Fijian names.
I do.
Called her Gladys Bananarama or something, didn't you?
Oh, Josiah, I think it's a
Josiah
Bananarama.
Okay, sorry if you're listening, Josiah.
I don't think he is. Damn. Although you might have been listening last week when Ben Ryan was on.
Yeah, it might have been because you celebrate the great Fijian rugby win in the...
Do you really?
Now, in this first hour, we will be chatting to David Priest, former Sunderland goalkeeper turned journalist and goalkeeping coach. And we'll be chatting about Joe Hart. And really, there's only one choice for England keeper. And surprisingly, he's not it. Ollie Bell joins us from ITV Racing. He is taking up boxing, son of Rupert. And he's telling us why. Also, we're going to talk a bit of golf later on. More interesting facts about Patrick Reed.
Interesting.
He is a player apart, really, compared with many other golfers. So we'll tell you more about that. Robbie Lowell will be here from Arsenal Fan TV. New series on Channel 4. I'm going to talk a bit of Jose as well and his reaction to that performance of the weekend. He says he's going to boot out a few big hitters for the game at the weekend, potentially.
And I ought to thank Ian Longley, who sent us a very long letter, a five-page handwritten letter with some very good stories in. I'll try and get to them, Ian. And a beautiful old football encyclopedia.
Oh, really?
I mean, just sort of incredible. I don't know when this was, probably about 1937 or something. But anyway, it's very nice.
It's got some good stuff in it, hasn't it?
Yeah. He wants it back, though. He's a big Palace fan, and there's a picture of
so
Palace.
He just lent it to us. God, that's high risk with Andy.
No, I mean,
not that he'd nick it, but he'd just lose it. He'll leave it in the office somewhere.
I won't.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll do our best to make sure we get it back to you. That's very trusting of you and possibly a bit daft.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on TalkSport. Making a welcome return to the studio is journalist and author Matthew Sy. Good to see you, Matthew. How are you?
Great to be here, guys. Lovely to see you.
Yeah.
Listen to you every afternoon, so it feels like deja vu.
Very kind of you. So you were listening in yesterday with Kevin Day was on fine form.
Terrific.
Wasn't
it? Yeah, wonderful.
Now, your new book, You Are Awesome, is aimed at kids, isn't it?
Yeah, so I wrote a couple of books for adults, Bounce and Black Box Thinking, mm-hmm. about the sort of psychology of success, how to get people to be resilient and to really fulfil their potential. And I got a reasonable amount of feedback from parents saying, OK, these lessons and messages are really strong, we like them, but I would love our kid, my son or my daughter, to read something like this. And it struck me, I've got two youngsters, 4 and 5. This book is aimed at 9 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
But it struck me, just thinking about it as a dad, that the online world, kids are surrounded by images of perfection, perfect bodies, airbrushed images, perfect lives. And I think it makes it really difficult for young people to take risks, to look silly from time to time. And because of that, they're sort of deeply constrained in terms of their growth. And I think this fear of failure is holding young people back. So I've written this book, you know, you're looking at it, Andy. It's a lot of storytelling, a lot of science, illustrations, to try and get them into a mindset where they can actually pursue their passions without worrying and being anxious.
I mean, I think it's a good time to do this because never have kids had a kind of instant online critics, maybe the way they do now. I mean, if you were a kid 20 years ago, 25, and you were end up in a school play or did a show, you're not going to get any feedback. You could go home after that, and everybody could be telling you how useless and terrible you are 10 seconds later. You can actually do it on your phone as you left the stage. Mm. Well, so that's a lot of pressure for kids to deal with.
You've articulated it miles better than I did. That's exactly right. So I remember doing a school play, Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I was Jacob the dad. I only had one line. I was 9 years old. One line. But you look out at all the faces looking at you. Mm-hmm. My parents were there. And, you know, you think and worry about negative judgment. And I fluffed the line. And I thought afterwards, my dad...
Can you remember what it was now?
I can't even remember the line. I said that. Probably selectively
filled in your brain.
But I thought, I worried my dad would sort of say, you've let us down, son. You know, that's just but actually, he had this big grin on his face. And he said, at least you've had a go. Next time it will be easier. And it was easier. But you're right. Now, as a journalist, I write a column.
Yeah.
20 years ago, you could write a column and you wouldn't know what people thought. Now, it's a kind of self-selecting group who will go after you. And so kids are, I think, anxious about having enough likes on Twitter, enough friends on Facebook. And I think it can. So you're right. I think we are in a situation now, particularly with the way the world is changing so fast. Technology, artificial intelligence. There was a survey recently saying that most kids today will probably have 10 to 15 jobs in their career, not like the old days where you had one career for life.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these jobs haven't been invented. Now, in that kind of context, you've got to embrace the unknown, you've got to take risks, and you've got to be capable of taking on negative feedback. Otherwise, what are you going to do?
So did you get some kind of expert guidance on how to pitch this at this sort of age group, Matthew? I say you've got young kids, but it's slightly different from talking to adults, isn't it?
Yes, so I did need some help, I've got to admit. So I wanted to make sure it was in exactly the right language, the right examples. So I'd be talking about David Beckham. Most of these kids weren't born when Beckham took that free kick, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of up-to-date examples, Jay-Z and J.K. Rowling. And I also had a brilliant guy called Matt help me with some of the language.
Yeah.
So he translated what I would normally be writing for, into language that kids would really engage with.
And I never let it get in my way personally.
Yeah.
I just say keep up.
Yeah, Robbie Savage has had a look. He said it was just bang on message.
That's perfect. But that's a difficult thing because it's quite hard to pitch that, isn't it? Because you don't want it to be patronising. Yeah. At the same token, you don't want it to go over their heads with there's no point.
Yeah, that, you know, well, you kind of describe exactly the dilemma I was in because you try and dumb it down. That's not going to resonate at all. So I think you've got to respect the intelligence, the independence of spirit of young people. So it is written. I mean, it will be, you know, an interesting and challenging read, I hope, for 9 to 14-year-olds. But you're absolutely right. You get that tone wrong and people won't engage. So I think that was probably the thing that we spent the most of the time on.
It is difficult, then, and not everybody can be successful, can they? I mean, it's always been that way, you know, that some people have just got more about them than other people.
That's true. Talent isn't irrelevant, for sure. Mm. But think about kids who might have a passion. You know, we're talking about theatre.
Yeah.
Might have a passion for wanting to get on the stage. Think how often they don't even dare get on that stage.
Sure.
Because you have to take a few risks, don't you? Or take broadcasting. You know, the first time I ever came on with you two... Mm-hmm. This is years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still in this building, though. I think you're in the studio over there.
Yeah.
And I was gripped by nerves. I mean, I don't know if you remember, I could almost not get the words out, because it is nerve-wracking being on air. Mm. But you do it once and do it again, and you sort of get over your nerves and the anxiety. And I really worry about kids, if you like, in their comfort zone. It's not that they're necessarily going to win a Nobel Prize or an Olympic gold medal, but at least if they get out there and give it a go, they will grow and they'll reach their potential, whatever that is.
I wonder how much kids realise that Instagram thinks people are curating their own lives, they're making themselves look good, or do they just... feel insecure by that, or do they realise that everybody does it?
Well, it's interesting. In other words, it's edited, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a curated...
We all do it. Yeah. Everybody does it. I caught a friend of mine, took a photo of her breakfast, and it was... I said, how long did it take you to set the photo? The croissants were in the right place, the coffee was just the right thing. And people do that. That's the trouble they go to make themselves look as if their life is fantastic.
But don't you think that's actually also applicable beyond the digital world? So take Beckham for a sec. You know, we see him taking, or we used to see him taking a free kick, or Ronaldo doing the bicycle. We see that performance, that sort of detonation of genius, and we think, oh my goodness, they're genius. And they are geniuses, to be fair. Mm. But what don't we see? We don't see the years of practice, all the mistakes they made, the fact that, you know, Beckham had so many difficulties in his early career, struggled to get into the side, but he continued with this sort of resilience. So I think there is a sort of fundamental misconception about what we see in relation to what it took for the high performers to get to that place. Mm.
Certainly with Ronaldo, you can see the work that he's putting just in his own body. I mean, it's incredible, you know.
And you know, the big thing, well, I mean, a number of, I think, fascinating things happened in his life. You know, when he went over to Sporting Lisbon for Madeira, he was teased, he was homesick, he wanted to go home, and his mum said, "Let's stay there, Cristiano, we think you've got the talent to grow." When he went to United, he was still a bit flashy, a bit insubstantial as a player. Mm. He said to me, I went and interviewed him about a year ago, spent a couple of hours with him in Madrid, and he said that the biggest thing was watching Gary Neville. Nowhere near as talented as Ronaldo, but he would get to training an hour early, practice every single dimension of his game, leave an hour late. So Ronaldo started taking it more seriously, started practicing the free kick where he goes through with the laces, and he started to develop. And now in Madrid, he's a huge role model for the younger players at that club. And you get this sort of contagion of professionalism when you really see what it takes to maximise your potential. Ronaldo wasn't doing that for a while.
What do you find in youth sport then, Matthew, in terms of attitudes of kind of kids coming through now? I'm sure you've kind of thought and written about this.
I think a couple of sort of thoughts on that. One is my deep fear occasionally is that kids are playing sport not because they love it, but because their parent wants them to be a champion. So they don't really... they're not internally motivated. Mm. They're sort of doing it to please a mentor or parent. I think that's dangerous. It's not healthy. Because they, in a funny kind of way, later in life, they resent the parent.
Yeah.
And they often burn out. Mm. I think it's really important for parents to understand what kids are really passionate about. You know, when a child is saying, yeah, I want to go to the theatre, I want to go to football, they're dragging you there, that's a great sign. Kids in that frame of mind sometimes will go through difficulties. And then I think it's okay to give them a nudge and a push, because we all go through those little crises from time to time. But I think it's really, you know, I say this as a dad, and I'm sure I'll make big mistakes with this. I think it's really important for parents to truly understand who their children are, what they're passionate about, because otherwise I think it can affect relationships. But other than that, I think the thing that worries me a bit about young athletes is often they're a bit too devastated by early setbacks. Mm. We all have them.
But it is interesting, because in the old days, I mean, my parents grew up from a different time, and their way of parenting wasn't what's your child good at? Well, they just said, you're going to be an accountant. I mean, it's ridiculous.
To you?
Yeah. I failed maths O-level 3 times, but they still said to me, no, you should be an accountant. That's what they thought was the right thing to do. You know? Whereas now, it's gone completely the other way.
I think there's still parents that say, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be an accountant. Mm. I still think that goes on. I don't think it's changed drastically.
Well, I don't think it's a disaster. You would have been a guy. Actually, they were
He tried, but he was terrible.
Oh, terrible. Yeah, he was terrible.
No,
it didn't last long.
So you did actually give it a go?
Oh, yeah, I gave it a go, yeah. But I don't think they were impressed with it. No, not really.
He still does the books here. He does all the accounts here at TalkSport, doesn't he?
He said one day the partner said to me, what did he say, the exact quote? He said, this is a chartered accountant, not a turf accountant.
Wow, that's cutting, isn't it?
It's very cutting.
It's like an Elf Ramsey line. So, Matthew's book, You Are Awesome, Find Your Confidence and Dare to Be Brilliant at Almost Anything, is available now. Wren and Rook are the publishers, and you say aimed at sort of
9 to 14. It's actually out on Thursday.
Oh, okay, out on Thursday, so you can pick up a copy.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Good afternoon, Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. Journalist and author Matthew Syme with us in the studio. We've just been chatting about his new book, which is aimed at kids. You Are Awesome. And we'll kind of give you some more details at the end of this chat where you can pick a copy up. It's out on Thursday. But among your other books is The Greatest, Matthew. And I wonder, we need to be adding potentially Pep Guardiola to that list. You've written quite a lot about him in the Times at various points on various topics. And what have you made of this season?
I've loved it. One of the great things about sport in general and about football in particular is the competition drives a wonderful process of evolution. You just have to watch football matches on ESPN from the 1970s. The guys were good players, but my goodness, it's moved on. Mm. The skill, the tactics, the way teams are set up, the formations. And I think Guardiola has disrupted English football in a major way with the way they train, much more use of the ball, creating a shared understanding between the players in the way that they're able to anticipate each other's intentions and therefore create long chains of passing, which often opens up the role of the goalkeeper. Who saw that coming? Where he's the first line of attack. You know, we sort of saw it with Barcelona, but it's been, and I think last year with, Bravo, wasn't it? Yeah. Last year, messing up. Guardiola kept telling his team, you've got to keep doing it. There are risks, but there's also a risk if you keep booting the ball long, losing possession, and then the other team comes back at you. You hold the ball, allow the goalkeeper to pass it out. You can overload the midfielder, open up spaces further down the pitch. And I think the contrast here is between Guardiola and Arsene Wenger, who came in as a disruptor, was incredibly innovative, made big changes that were mimicked by many of the clubs up and down the Premier League, but became complacent. And he hasn't adapted ever since. I think he's way too stubborn. And Guardiola has shown that if you're prepared to be creative and to think differently and to do it with an incredible level of meticulous professionalism, it takes the game to a new place. And I think what's going to be interesting next season, I think it'll be tougher for them, because I think a whole range of managers are going to start thinking in a different way. Mm. They're going to mimic the good stuff, and they're going to practice in the off-season the kinds of tactics that will repudiate what Guardiola's trying to do.
You have to have the players. We were talking about this with Jonathan Wilson yesterday. Yeah. Like the people say, oh, he should go to Tranmere, see if he can do it there. But he probably couldn't because, with respect, he'd have Tranmere players.
And at that level, I bet he'd improve them.
He probably would improve them, but you know he's meticulously built this squad. Yep. It took him a whole year of not winning anything, which must have bothered him. But this year he's got those players that he wanted to play the system he wants to play, and that's part of the process, isn't it?
Well, he was asked a question not so long ago: what is the most important thing in football management? And he said, having great players. He's had a checkbook that's enabled him to sign them. He inherited a great team at Barcelona. I think that the tactics that one deploys are absolutely dependent on the players that one has. But once you do have access to some of the best players in the world, you have some ideas about how you can innovate tactically, but also to enhance their abilities, not just individual ability. What I think he does is he sees football quintessentially as a game not of soloists, but as an orchestra. So he sees the team not as a group of disparate individuals, but he's trying to think about how they can interact in a way to exploit the space. I mean, it's very much in the tradition of Rinus Michels going through Cruyff and total football. I think he's a real custodian, but he's taken it to a new place. And it is, I mean, look, I don't want to, I think a lot of people get quite mystical about him, and, you know, the aesthetics are amazing. He's obviously a great manager, but he has some flaws too. He's not reacted terribly well to a couple of the defeats.
Well, I mean, you wrote about this a while back, that sort of halo effect, they call it, don't they? Because he comes across as this kind of this good guy and this professor, that he gets away with stuff in a way that Jose wouldn't, who is the panto villain. Really,
well, exactly. That's, you know, the yin and the yang of those two is quite funny. And I think journalistically we have a lot of fun with it.
Oh,
right?
The contrast between pragmatic and romantic is, you know, it's been fascinating. And people, I mean, your argument is an interesting one, because Mourinho has got the players but isn't producing the quality of football that Pep is.
Yeah, and that's a great contrast, the romantic and the pragmatist. I mean, I think that is an ancient dichotomy, and I think that definitely describes those two. It was quite funny. Mourinho, he kicked a bottle, didn't he, down the touchline. I don't think he even ended up on the pitch, and he got sanctioned. You can imagine Guardiola would do the same thing and it wouldn't even get noticed. Having said that, I think Mourinho, I mean, he may be changing, I hope so, judging what happened last weekend, but he has been a bit graceless in defeat. And I think that's a shame. I think Guardiola has done that a bit too. But I think if one had to...
I think they all do. They hate losing. Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't get to this position if you liked losing and you were a great loser. I mean, you know, Fergie was a wonderful manager, but you know, and he was gracious to a point, but only to a point.
Yeah, and I think in terms of the battle between them, Mourinho, I think, has been quite stubborn. I think he is using the tactics, you know, tactical periodization. He's all into the way he...
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sets up his teams. I think he's going to have to be really imaginative and be prepared to think a bit differently if he's going to enhance his players and threaten City next. I'd still say City, for me, strong favourites to catch.
I think Liverpool are the closest to
them. Yeah, possibly.
Second half of the season, I think Liverpool have been almost as good. I mean, they also have that approach, that sort of, they are, when they're going forward, they are great to watch.
Yeah.
And I think people want that now from football. You know, it goes through, it's all fashions, but, you know, pragmatic was very, very successful. I mean, look at Mourinho. He's reminded us on Sunday. He's won 8 titles. So
yeah, that's true.
It does work.
But I think also it's worth saying that you must get this a lot. You know, as a journalist, people say, well, why don't you write about other sports? Something other than football. Now, why don't you write about badminton? I get this a lot. Why don't you write about table tennis? Why don't we see... But it's interesting that now almost every sport has access to television coverage. You know, there's loads of acres of coverage on Sky of most sports. Football still dominates. In fact, in some ways, it's even more dominant. I think the reason, it's not coincidental. It dominates in China. Table tennis was the biggest sport from the 1950s onwards. As soon as they got access to television pictures of football, they have become obsessed. It's miles bigger than tennis. I think the reason is the it's got that combination of simplicity, complexity, drama, tribalism. You bring those together with great icons like Guardiola going head-to-head with Mourinho, like those amazing comebacks we saw last week. I mean, it's incomparable as a sport. I didn't grow up as a football fan. You know, it wasn't my But looking at it, I hope neutral, I think it is the greatest sport.
This kind of ties in, and you're probably well-placed to answer this. You've been to China, I'm sure, many occasions because of table tennis. And but if the listeners don't know, you were an Olympian, weren't you? Table tennis Olympian in this country. You're the number one table tennis player in this country. They love table tennis. They have lots of great table tennis players. The sport's very popular. They took to snooker. They've produced some brilliant snooker players. Yeah. Mm. They love football, yet still... We can't produce a particularly good
And it's not just teams, it's also individual. They haven't produced a lot of individual players either, really.
No, they haven't. So have you looked at as to why you think that might be?
I think there's a convincing explanation. It's the same explanation for why UK sport has been able to produce world-class rowers, dominated rowing, cycling, and a whole range of other Olympians. But with a huge budget, the FA has not managed to create a national team that can take on the world. And the reason is football, unlike rowing, is the national sport in almost every country on the planet. Mm. You know, in rowing, if you invest a lot of money in rowers, while no other nations are doing the same thing, you've got a massive, massive advantage. We have velodromes. We have research institutes for our cyclists. They don't have that in Africa. But in Africa, with low entry costs into football, you just need a pair. I mean, I went to sub-Saharan Africa miles away from the electricity grid. You know, no artificial light. They had kerosene lamps. And near the village, I was there for a charity. It was about creating solar lamps because these kerosene lamps are really damaging for health. Mm. The jungle is nearby. You know, wild. There was a clearing, two teams playing 11 aside with branches for posts, a referee, clear understanding of the offside rule, and the only TV in the village, which was powered by a generator. Every weekend, they would watch the Premier League. They knew who had won between Arsenal and Man City the week before. I went to Dar es Salaam afterwards, the city, and the hotel didn't have any, didn't have a TV, so I went to the local bar. There were tribes there watching the football. It's difficult to become the best in the world at football because everyone in the world wants to be a good footballer, everyone has the money, the access to get it. I mean, they might not have the coaching, but the entry costs are low. It's like the ultimate global meritocracy.
Wow. Yes, very true, actually.
No, that's a good point.
And you do wonder if ultimately, you know, China will, you know, the great coaches will go there and try and bring the team. Yeah. You wonder if it ever will.
They've got the money, haven't they? I mean, they're hiring. They're spending some money on great foreign players who I think, you know, the iconography of that may inspire more people to take it up. Maybe.
I don't know.
No, I mean, Carlos Tevez probably set that back from
Iniesta's going there. You see, like, absolute fortune. I mean, really? More money than Neymar.
What a player he is, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he is. But, not, you know.
He's underrated, not, though, right?
Very. No, no, he's a brilliant player. But, I mean, he is certainly coming to the end of his sort of European life.
Yeah.
Well, Matthew, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for coming in. You're awesome. Find your confidence and dare to be brilliant in almost anything. Is out on Thursday, and it's Wren and Rook are the publishers, and we wish you well with it.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks, guys.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on TalkSport.
The Hawksby and Jacobs daily podcast from TalkSport.
Anyway, we asked you earlier on, off the back of some pictures that emerged, Lionel Richie's doing a tour over the summer in this country, and he's playing a few football stadiums, which meant a PR opportunity to have him holding up St Johnstone, Carlisle, Shrewsbury. And who was the other one? I've forgotten the other shirt. Chesterfield shirts, holding them up. It looked a bit, it was like he'd signed for them all. Like, some agent.
You have a shirt and tie on underneath and just a football shirt over the top.
Yeah, so he was just holding up the shirts. It did seem a bit weird. Yeah. So one of the listeners got in touch straight away. I think it was Steve Pye, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was Perlo, is it me you're looking for? Now, off the back of that, we've had a few from you.
You won't top that, surely.
Well, I don't know. We've got Cheru, say me, says Walter Cooper. That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
Once, twice, three times and you're off, says Martin. That's very good. Three times a Maidley, says former Leeds defender Paul Maidley.
Marvellous.
That's from Lowell there. Yeah. Dances on the ceiling. Says Philip Hughes. And there we are. That's quite
like
good.
That one.
What else we got? Stuck on IU, says Rob
Sorry.
Maddox.
Yeah, that's good too.
Dancing with Glenn Whelan. I'm not sure that works, LB, but thank you very much. No. You are my Des IE. That's very good.
That's
I'd like to think he'll sing, he'll change the lyrics
well, he might.
To make
he
him a bit
know.
More
no,
football.
He does
that
like
was
a bit
from
of football.
Stuart. So you can keep going, getting pumptastic if you want to. TalkSport.com/H&J. Text to 81089. Tweet to TSH&J.
Now, you know, the weather, you'll feel it, that it's turning, and it, hopefully by the end of this week, it's going to be very, very nice. We're going to have a heat wave. And the Star, never short of to cash in on the weather news.
Oh, yeah.
Landlords are set to cash in on this week's heat wave by throwing their beer gardens open to barbecues. Retailers say they've seen a surge in demand for grub cooked outdoors, with pubs set to make a mint from hungry punters. It's not bitcoins, it's just barbecues.
Yes, like we just invented. You can cook outside when the weather gets warm.
It's incredible.
Pictures at 11. That's a bit of a shock. Just interesting, listen to what Victoria was saying, this witch report about the ridiculous price of tickets, you know, £5,000 to go and see an England game. We were only told last week that England fans weren't buying tickets.
I don't see where
now
the market is.
Now they're spending £5,000. And there's a quite important, really, if you are thinking of picking up a ticket, do be very careful, because we've been told that they are checking everybody's passes. When you get tickets...
If they have your name on it.
Yeah, if you get them on the black... Well, you have to wear a fan pass, basically. When you're out there, you'll wear... When you get your ticket, you'll have a little kind of fan pass. And when they had the Confederations Cup in Russia, because we often think, oh, yeah, they always say they're going to check your ticket, there's going to be a cordon. But I got some tickets off my mate when I went to France or Germany, wherever, and it was fine. But it appears this time... It is different. And for the Confederations Cup games, everybody who went into the stadiums had their passes checked. So, and it's photo ID you have to wear around your neck. And everybody did. And apparently it all went off quite smoothly and they got people into the stadium quickly. But there were no exceptions. So if you are looking just to pick up tickets from a mate, do bear that in mind. As the guy from which we're saying in that report, it's a long way to go. Only to find out you can't actually get into the ground, especially if you've paid over the odds for the ticket.
No, good warning. Right now, just a quick T20 birthday spread for you. This is the reduced version of the original game. You used to have 10 birthdays. This one's only got one.
OK, how many years do you think I will be within? Well, I've got to try and guess the age of this.
You've got to guess the age of him. It's his birthday today. Mm. It's basically... I think you'll be within... I think you're good at this. I'll give you within six.
OK, within six. OK, fair enough.
And it's the composer of the Miami Vice theme and many other pieces of music, Jan Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Jan Hammer. He used to share a bunk bed with Eamon Holmes.
Is that
but
right?
Who took the top bunk?
But that's... Yeah, that's... I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Dion Dublin, he's gives a small round of applause. He's pulled over at the side of the road, Dion, to give that a small round of applause. Jan Hammer, he's probably older now. Yeah, he's probably about 70. I'm going to go Jan Hammer 70. What is he?
70.
Is he really? The big 7-0 today?
Fantastic.
Should have bought him a cake.
You should have done, really.
I'll pop in. I'll get him the old caterpillar
now,
cake in Tesco's or whatever.
Earlier in the show, I said to you that Ian Longley had written us a long letter.
He had.
Handwritten, five. You don't see that very often.
That's nice. Old school.
He says, I enjoy listening to your show, brackets, and others.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough. Well, yeah, not exclusively, actually.
And I'd love to email on occasions. However, whilst I can do the Times crossword, I'm an essence computer illiterate. Never mind, it's really the same as writing, really.
Yeah.
I've therefore decided to write to you points which you might find interesting and amusing.
It's very formal.
And he also sent it is very formal.
It's nice, yeah. It's
the
nice.
Football Encyclopedia pre-war.
But he wants it back.
He wants it back, but I don't think he wants it back immediately.
Okay.
The producer straight away went
tea
to
all over it,
he went to Torquay. And they were on page 144. He said to me, talk here on 144, because he knew that. And there's a photo of the Manchester City team that won the FA Cup in 1934.
Oh, yeah.
And back row, Tilson Dale Busby, which is Matt Busby, of course, Frank Swift, who perished in Munich, of course, Barnett, Bray, McLucky, Toseland, Marshall, Cowan, Hurd and Brooke.
Yeah.
So not quite as many foreign players as they've got now.
They may have considered Scottish players as foreign in those days, of course. Yeah.
Now, he sends me quite a lot of things, first match, but this one is on a lighter note.
On a lighter note, yeah. We always like that.
He said, you ran an article, it's not really an article, on penalty incidents, especially including stranger eccentric misses. Mm. The most spectacular...
You've got a stranger eccentric misses.
I certainly have. That is for sure. Yeah. The most spectacular...
Yeah.
She'd love that, though, if she was listening.
Yeah.
The most... Still only
she doesn't listen. She's watching old repeats of Neighbours.
Doctors. She loves Don't Ask Me. That's her favourite bit.
To watch you humiliated on air every Monday.
She was quite excited yesterday that I got so close. Mm. The most spectacular miss I ever saw was from Don Rogers at my beloved Crystal Palace.
Oh, yeah, I remember Don Rogers.
Shooting toward the Holmesdale end, he managed to slip. The ball came off his left heel and went out for a throw-in. That is quite spectacular, wow, let's be honest.
Glenn Murray, you're off the hook after the weekend, yeah.
What's... strange but true. I've highlighted them, so I think they're safe.
Strange but true, okay.
Strange but true. Mm. We were preparing our house to put up for sale. The estate agent said that highly polished windows help give a good impression. Mm. I decided to spend the day cleaning and needed plenty of cleaning rags. I went through my chest of drawers and pulled out some old clothing to cut up as rags.
Yeah.
I pulled out an old Andy Johnson shirt. And as I no longer wore it, as Andy had long since left us, I cut it into squares. Mm. I started cleaning the windows with the aforesaid cut-up shirt.
Yeah.
After a few minutes, I turned on Talk Sport by way of something to listen to while cleaning. The first thing I heard was that Neil Warnock had decided to bring Andy back to the club after an absence of several years. It's great, isn't it?
That's fantastic. So, but it was too late then. He couldn't wear the shirt again.
Put it all back. He'd have to start sewing.
It was covered in window lean.
Patchwork.
Yeah.
Friendship request. Okay, this is, the final one. Having watched football for nearly 50 years, I've seen some violence, but fortunately I've never been mixed up in any. Yeah. However, I was hit round the head once at a game by a fellow Palace supporter.
Oh, no.
The game was Palace versus Manchester United. It was 0-0. It was early Ronaldo days, and Rooney was playing like an express train, unlike the steam locomotive going uphill as he is now. Bit harsh.
We should get him on this, though. I like
he's good,
him.
Isn't he?
He's good value.
We were holding out well when United put the ball... In our banana. No, not sorry.
Put the ball in our banana.
That was another.
You're talking. It's the wrong page.
Writes on both
it's a five-page letter. He put the ball in our banana. Your Honour.
The ball in our net. Oh, it would be net, wouldn't it? Just as I hit the net. Just as it hit the net, sorry.
He's killing this. No, I hope the payoff. I hope the payoff works.
Just as it hit the net, I saw the linesman's flag go up. I leapt up to celebrate the disallowed goal when I was hit round the back of the head from a Palace fan sitting behind me. He gave me some verbal abuse about Manchester United, assuming I was a United supporter celebrating the goal.
Oh, yeah.
Once I pointed out the goal was being disallowed and I was a Palace fan celebrating that fact, he tried to shake me by the hand and wanted to become a mate after clumping him round the head.
What's the name of the guy who sent this in?
It is Ian Longley.
Ian, thank you very much. Much obliged to you and yours, which I believe is a phrase you probably still use by the sound
Brilliant.
Of it.
Big Palace.
Thank you very much, Ian. Good man. And we will send the book back. We'll look after it. We'll have a good flick through. I bet some gold in that. What year was it? 1930? What? Football
pre-war, so about 30. That's
amazing. Okay, well, we'll check that out, see if we can find some gold for you. Tell you how much the game has changed over the years. Bob Bubka's going to join us shortly. Patrick Reid, of course.
Put it this way, Sir Frederick Waugh was the secretary of the FA.
Oh, yes, times have changed. Yeah. I don't know if he was friendly with Farrier or Lamb. I wouldn't think so, was he?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hawksby and Jacobs here on Talk Sport, and if you've been looking online today, you may have seen a picture of Tyson Fury looking to get back in June, of course, his first return fight with a bit of a black eye. Well, he's been sparring, and the man that gave him the black eye joins us now, heavyweight David Allen. Good afternoon, David.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Yeah, he says he's going to get his revenge next week. I take it you're sparring again, are you?
Well, maybe not now. I'm not sure what punch it was, to be honest. My eyes were closed. But one of them must have landed, I don't know.
You've sparred with him before, so you're pretty well placed to tell us how the old comeback trail is going, because Ricky Hatton had been sending pictures, and we spoke to him a little while ago, and he said he looked in good nick, and his timing was good, his reflexes were good. So how have you found it?
Yeah, you know, he's not back to his very best yet, but that's understandable, you know. He's not back down to his fighting weight. I was with him 2014, I first joined... his uncle's camp, you know, I trained with Tyson, his cousin Huey, and I saw him on and off sparring on and off all the way through to the Klitschko fight, and at that point he was the best heavyweight in the world, you know, and he was fantastic and one of the best heavyweights I think there's ever been. He's coming back now, you know, he's still very good, he's still much better than me, but you know, he's not back there yet. Understandably, he needs more time in the gym, you know, he needs a fight he's going to come back to, and I think he will come back to the level that it was at, maybe even surpass it, and that was very exciting.
What makes him so difficult to? I mean, you're sparring with him, so what is it about him as a fighter? He appears to be kind of quite awkward, doesn't he?
Mm. I think first and foremost, you know, it's obvious to see how big he is. Nearly 7 foot. His arms are nearly 7 foot long. And that's the obvious thing. That's easy for anyone to see. You can see the size of him. But also, the fact that he moves so well. He moves like a middleweight. Fast hands. And then when you hit him, he just kind of talks to you and just says, oh, that was good. Well done. In a really sarcastic way, which kind of winds up again. So he's kind of got it all, you know. And then the stuff that people don't see because he moves so well and he focuses on his movement and his boxing skill. When he sits down and he's punching, he really wants to hurt. Yeah, you know he does, and he can really punch. And when you're 20 stone man, you're going to be very strong. You know he's got a bit of everything, I think. So I'm biased though. I am very biased, as people always tell me.
A lot of good judges though think Fury at his best will give Anthony Joshua a pretty good fight and probably they think win. I think.
Yeah, you know, like I say, I am very biased as a friend of Tyson's, and Anthony Joshua, I wouldn't say I dislike the man, but he's not my favourite heavyweight in the world. But anyway, so I am biased, but I do think Tyson Fury, the best Tyson Fury, I have to stress that, the best Tyson Fury, I think, beats Anthony Joshua. Tyson Fury, anything less than his best, would come on tough against Joshua.
You've sparred with Anthony Joshua, haven't you?
Yeah, I sparred Anthony probably more than I have Tyson, to be honest.
So, what do you make of him when you're sparring? What are the differences between the two men?
I've not sparred Anthony for a few years now, but I first sparred him 2012 before London Olympics, and I didn't really think much to him at the time. Mm. You know, he was a lot smaller than he is now. He was basic. I didn't really think anything to him, and then he won the gold medal. And every time, but the thing with Anthony is, I sparred him often, but the times where I didn't spar him for a couple of months or so, I'd go back and the improvement would be so vast. You know, he worked so hard. I don't think he's as naturally talented as, you know, not even lights of heavyweight at domestic level, but definitely not as talented as Tyson Fury's. But he just works so hard, and every time you see him, he improves. So in the time that I last sparred him until now, the improvement would be amazing. So it wouldn't be really fair to comment, but I just think he's not naturally. He hasn't got the gifts that Tyson's got. And if Tyson puts the work in, there's no way that Anthony can beat him.
Wow. Now, look, let me just read something that Vladimir Klitschko said at the weekend. I don't know if you've seen these quotes yet, but I'll give them to you. And I say, I'm quoting this. So he was asked basically who's likely to win in the fight between Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. And of course, Klitschko has fought them both. He said, hands down, Joshua. He is going to be the complete fighter, technically, size-wise, weight-wise, power-wise, and he is a good learner. The other guy, Fury, he says, this is the quote, is like a fart in the wind. He's there and he's gone. In the history of boxing, there's a lot of examples of this kind of guy. They can be successful for a time, but they're not disciplined enough to continue to be successful. I wish Tyson well, but I think there's a lack of discipline there, and discipline is more important than motivation, he says. So what do you make of that?
You know, it's very hard to. I'm Dave Allen from Doncaster, who's lost 3 fights out of 17, and that's one of the best heavyweights of all time. Mm. So his argument will probably carry a little bit more weight. But what I would say is, Tyson, you couldn't really argue with the discipline. Tyson's not boxed now. It'd be nearly 3 years by the time he gets back in the ring. But to say that to lessen his achievement of beating Vladimir that night in Dusseldorf. He's a little bit silly to me. He beat Vladimir very comfortably, you know, whereas Vladimir, Anthony really struggled with Vladimir. And the Vladimir that boxed Anthony Joshua hadn't boxed for 18 months. He was 41 years old. I feel like Tyson, he must have beat the better Vladimir. He wasn't coming off an 18-month playoff. I think Tyson was that good that night. Maybe not exciting, but he was that good and that much better than Vladimir. He made Vlad look like an old man. And Joshua boxed faded, not as good Vladimir, but made him look like the old Vladimir. So I think them comments are more Vladimir. You know, I think he's a big admirer of Anthony. You know, and I think he sees a lot of himself in Anthony, and he probably struggles to see a lot of himself in Tyson. He's definitely a one-off. So I think that's more what it is. I think he's more he's just an Anthony Joshua fan and not so much of a Tyson Fury fan.
Now, as far as I know, you haven't sparred with Deontay Wilder, but you have fought Luis Ortiz, who Wilder beat a month or so ago. What do you make of Wilder In terms of, and that would be a very interesting fight if you fought Tyson Fury. No one would know what was going on. But do you think he could trouble Anthony Joshua?
Yeah, I think that for me, Fury, Wilder, Joshua, they're the three main men, you know. Wilder, he's a really funny one. Like you say, you watch him and you're not really sure what you're watching. He's so awkward. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing himself. But he's got that one big right hand that's capable of taking anybody out. I was in there with Luis Ortiz myself. I know what a fighter he is. You know, very smart. He can punch himself, and he had Deontay Wilder going a few times. And Deontay Wilder, he rode the storm, and he came back and he stopped Luis Ortiz comprehensively in the end. So you've got to say he's a real danger man. And at the minute the Ortiz win, for me, marks him out, makes him the number one heavyweight in the world. You know. Tyson right now, he's not boxing 2.5 years. We can't really bring him into the whole ranking thing. I was ranking the heavyweights, you know. I'd have Deontay Wilder 1, Joshua 2, and Tyson when he fights in June, he will come back in there somewhere in the top 10. Because I'm told his opponent will be a lot better than people think.
Oh, okay. Because Dominic Brazil and Kevin Johnson, who are both guys who've fought Anthony Joshua, they've been mentioned. There was some talk of you being part of that sort of warm-up process. I mean, you're sparring with him at the moment. That would suggest you're not going to be fighting him in June.
I can rule Kevin Johnson out. I asked him about Kevin Johnson and he laughed. So I'm guessing that's a definite no.
Brazil did better against him. He went 7 rounds, didn't he? He was pretty decent. He took some shots, didn't he? And he gave a few himself when he fought Joshua. So is that a possibility, you think?
I think Brazil's a possibility. Mm. Yeah, definite possibility. I think he'd be a very good win as well, you know. Brazil, he did well against Joshua, but since then he's beat Agonu. He was a very good heavyweight prospect. So, you know, he was giving me certain names yesterday, and he was saying it could be him. There was all top 30, top 40 at the worst. You know, definitely not myself. It definitely will not be me. They can't pay me enough money, I'm afraid.
you don't fancy sparring with him next week, from what you've said.
So yeah, after he's told me he's going to return the favour of the black eye, I might be busy that day. So.
Now look, your last time out was a bit unfortunate because the worst way really for a fighter to, well, apart from being knocked out, obviously, but an accidental clash of heads, and you got cut, and they had to stop the fight, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, it was like I say, it was unfortunate. It was nobody's fault. Only 2 minutes of action had gone, so it was too early to say which way it was going to go. That was a rematch, you know, it's been a year in the making, a lot of waiting about, a lot of frustration. Now, Lenroy Thomas, he fights Joe, I don't know if I can say that, cause I'm not sure that's been announced, or maybe just announced that early again. That's the second time I've done that this week. But anyway,
yeah, he's fighting someone else, we'll say, shall we?
Yeah, he's fighting somebody else, possibly Joe, which I've just said, but anyway, I apologise again. But, yeah, so Lenroy Thomas fight looks like it's off, at least for the foreseeable future. I was looking for a fight with Daniel Dubois last week, being a bit of a nuisance on the internet, like always. But at the minute, I'm just doing a leisure centre tour of the UK. I'm going round, it starts in Walsall Town Hall, hopefully on to Darlington, you know, fighting, you know, not the greatest opposition, getting busy, winning, and just getting around and just enjoying life, really, as well as boxing. It's great, you know. I'm in a really good position right now, and we're just making the most of it.
Good stuff. Look, great to talk to you, Dave. Really interesting, and we wish you all the best. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
There we are, David Allen there, the heavyweight. Give us some real insight.
Yeah? He was fun.
Yeah.
Good.
Joe Joyce, I think he was talking about then. You probably guessed anyway, which would be an interesting fight, yeah.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show.
Bit when I did confuse a net for a banana.
Yeah, that's where it happens. Strange. It does happen, yeah. Of course. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Thanks for downloading us. Night, folks. See you later.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.